Corporation and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but belief in God is dangerous when it gets mixed with politics. Oh, really? You think so? Well, then you must be having tremendous trouble with Obama's inauguration address. He talked about God every bit as much as George Bush used to do in his speeches. Or did you only mean right-wing politics? It's a problem if religion mixes with the right. It's not a problem if it mixes with the left. Is that by chance what you meant? In any event, is there really evidence that belief in God has been a bad thing for public officials? It served Abraham Lincoln fairly well. His condemnation of slavery was directly linked to his belief in God. Speaking of our 16th president, Obama likes to compare himself to Abraham Lincoln. As you know, the Bible he was sworn in on was Lincoln's actual Bible. This is good. This is good. If a role model like Lincoln truly influences Obama's policies, our country will be headed on the right track. Still, I just have to say this. I've thought long and hard. Other than the fact that they are both politicians from Illinois, I can't think of one similarity between Lincoln and Obama. Not even one. Lincoln did not believe in mandatory redistribution of wealth. Lincoln was not shy about waging war when the alternative was unacceptable. Lincoln was not one to suppress free speech through things like the Fairness Doctrine. And had you asked Lincoln if our Constitution guaranteed the right to same-sex marriage, he would have given you a puzzled look. Oh, I suppose you could chalk that one up and say Lincoln was just not as enlightened as Obama on such social issues, but then we are supposed to be making a comparison. Here's another one. Lincoln suspended habeas corpus. Oh, yeah. I almost forgot. Lincoln invented the Republican Party. Now, some have said that since Lincoln freed slaves and Obama is descended from slaves, there's a beautiful symmetry between the two men. Now, I'm not sure what kind of character comparison that is, but okay, sure. Sure, I'll go along. That is beautiful symmetry. More correctly put, it would be beautiful if it were actually true. Obama is not descended from slaves. His father left Kenya and chose to live in America because he felt he would have a better life in America. And Obama's mother was white. Now, none of this need take away from the pride that many African Americans are feeling as they witness our first African American president. And I have no desire to rain upon anybody's happiness. Still, it begs the question about Obama's similarity to Lincoln. By the way, are you still of the opinion that anyone who voted against Obama is a racist, that that was the only reason they would have done it? Okay, then please, if you will, answer this question. How do you explain the many, many African Americans who did not vote for the man? Were they against the idea of a black president? If not, what were their reasons for choosing McCain or staying home? And finally, if they had their reasons, is it possible, even remotely possible, that many white people voted against Obama for those same reasons? But now I know what some of you are thinking. Bob, it's time to put these reasons aside and give the poor guy a chance. Well, actually, quite a few pastors, radio talk show hosts, and other conservative leaders sound like they are going to give Obama a chance. I'm glad. I'm truly glad. Although I didn't vote for the man, wishing him failure would be wishing our country failure. Yes, we will give him a chance. As a matter of fact, in the interval between November 2008 and January 2009, more kindness has been bestowed upon Obama by his opposition than the left ever offered George Bush the entire 8 years he was in office. Having said that, Even though I do include myself amongst those who will give the man a chance, my own opinion here needs a bit of qualification. Quite frankly, I'm not as optimistic as my peers. My concerns about Obama have not vanished into thin air. Neither am I going to apologize for feeling apprehensive about a man who voted against the Illinois Infant Protection Act, then lied about it, toasted a Palestinian terrorist, promised to sit down and talk with the likes of Hamas and Ahmadinejad, lied about the Republican Party, accusing them at every turn of racism when no such racism was ever once exhibited, lied about George Bush, blaming him for every single problem in our country. I mean, if somebody got a flat tire, they blamed it on Bush. And a man who spoke about silencing talk radio through the Fairness Doctrine. Should I suddenly ignore the man's verbal offenses and voting record as if none of it ever happened? On the other hand, given the off chance that this liar may have also lied to the left just to get elected, and given the hope that God can change a man's heart, I am sincere when I say I will pray for my president. And yes, I will call him my president. Bush got a mixed review from me. Any of you that's been following this show these number of years knows this. I voted for Bush, but always challenged him over the air when the occasion called for it. I will do the same with Obama, make no mistake. Yes, Obama will get a chance, but a chance is not the same as a free pass. If you just joined us, you are listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. My guest today is going to take us away from politics for a while and explore some pop culture. Now, you are already familiar with our reoccurring movie critic, Mark Boubian. I would like to introduce another friend, Martin Thomas, a movie connoisseur in his own right because he comes from a family very connected with the film and television industry. His father, Gary Thomas, spent many years both in front and behind the camera before he felt the Lord calling him to full-time Christian service. In 1951, when his dad was 16 years old, he watched the filming of The Greatest Show on Earth at Paramount Studios. As you recall, that film starred Charlton Heston, Betty Hutton, and Jimmy Stewart. His grandfather, Melvin, had a standing invitation from the great Cecil B. DeMille to visit any of his productions. In 1955, Martin's dad, Gary Thomas, was an extra on Somebody Up There Likes Me with Paul Newman and Everett Sloan. Sloan was in the Mercury Theater repertory company of Orson Welles, the icon. In 1957, Gary Thomas had a recurring role as a radio operator on the TV series Silent Service, which was a dramatic anthology of the U.S. submarine fleet. Gary Thomas also won a local talent show doing impersonations and was invited to appear on the Ed Sullivan Show. In 1961, Gary Thomas worked for Clokey Productions. To you baby boomers out there, this will sound very familiar. That is the studio which produced Gumby. It's also the studio which produced Davy and Goliath. Remember when they had those figures that we now do with computer animation, but it was the stop-action animation? He worked on 40 episodes of Davy and Goliath as an animator. And in 1962, Gary Thomas landed a contract job with one of the first special effects houses in Hollywood called Project Unlimited. He operated a triplane Cinerama camera, the first Cinerama, and did the titles in eight the so-called languages for The Wonderful World of Brothers Grimm, a stellar motion picture. In the 50s, the Thomas family developed long-lasting friendships with several individuals in the entertainment industry, including Hollywood stuntman Jim Sargent, who doubled for James Coburn in The Magnificent Seven, one of my favorite movies. Gary Thomas felt a calling to full-time Christian service in 1968 and moved his family to Alaska to minister at a small Eskimo village. More recently, he was an extra in Free Willy. He also appeared in an episode of the series Under Suspicion with Karen Silas playing a murder detective. Well, all this to say that Gary Thomas is actually not on our program today. But once again, Gary Thomas's son, Martin Thomas, is on the program. And growing up around show business gave Martin a love for the profession. Now, Martin, a woman named Sherry Penny used to babysit you when you were young. There's an interesting story associated with her.
Yeah, Sydney's, their daughter, Sydney Penny, became a very successful actress. She was on the miniseries The Thornbirds. You recall that miniseries?
Oh, that was a wonderful miniseries with Richard Chamberlain and
right.
Rachel Ward.
Yeah, she played
miniseries.
Their young Rachel Ward in that.
Oh, and as I recall, she was in it for several hours before Rachel Ward took over the role.
She sure was.
Very
She's
good
also
actress.
The main juvenile lead in Pale Rider opposite Clint Eastwood.
Oh, the Pale Rider, kind of the remake of High Plains Drifter in a
or
way.
Or actually the remake of Shame. And so, remember the little boy in Shane, Sydney Penney was actually
Shane, come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Shane,
she was a little girl in that. So it was a remake with that with Clint Eastwood.
Oh, interesting.
And then she was on the New Gidget, Beverly Hills 90210, several soap operas like Santa Barbara, The Bold and the Beautiful, and All My Children. And then we had another very close family friend called Robert Cornthway. Your audience would recognize not his name but his face. He's been in so many different productions. He was in the original Thing. Black and white picture that the monster was actually James Arness. It was one of his first roles.
Oh, James Arness played this monster before he went on to do Matt Dillon in
Gunsmoke.
Matt Dillon,
yeah. Wow. And he was in The War of the Worlds, the first one, the original one, which I actually like better than the remake with the Spielberg remake.
Well, now I've known you for, we've been friends for a number of years, and I know that you're a movie buff. Martin's got a movie collection that would be the envy.
Which we won't mention
anybody.
How many I have in my collection.
I always thought I had a good collection until I look at Martin's, and then I'm going, gee whiz, I don't have that good of a collection. But I'm kind of curious, you kind of grow up around show business. Why did you not go into show business yourself? You seem to have a love and a knack for it.
I was, the only sane person in my family, so I didn't pursue that. I have a couple other sisters that kind of went that direction, but I didn't. And but I still, having that background really instilled an appreciation for cinema for me, both in front of and behind the camera.
Now, your dad was invited to be on the Ed Sullivan Show. Did he actually go on?
Or? Oh, yeah, he sure did.
And was it a big hit?
It was pretty good, yeah. He did impersonations, from what I recall, John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart.
Wow. I guess in those days they couldn't give you a DVD copy of it. Was he given any kind of copy at
all? We tried, because I have a sister who owns a public relations firm in New York, and they tried to go through went through the NBC archives. Couldn't find it. I did see an 8mm print of it that they took like off of television.
Okay.
Of course, it was silent, but I actually got to see his visual performance.
Now, for those of you that are not baby boomer or older, you may not be as familiar with the Ed Sullivan Show, but in those days, it was the Tonight Show.
Yeah,
there was nothing bigger than the Ed Sullivan Show. Well, Martin, this gave you a love for movies, and the Academy Awards nominations came out a couple of days ago, which is why we're going to do a few movie shows in a few weeks. We'll have Mark Boobian back on, too. And other than the fact that I know Milk was nominated, and it's a movie about homosexuality, and I'm just sure Hollywood's going to give that the award to pay back everybody for Proposition 8. They don't go by art. They go by politics. Thinking about the Academy Awards, a lot of times makes us think of the movies we wish had been nominated. And you today are going to go through your top 10 favorite movies of all time.
Yes.
Not necessarily this year.
Right.
But top 10 movies of all time.
And that was tough. Like yourself, we both have a love for movies, and it's tough. There's so many great movies out there. So it's tough, putting 10 together, but I did manage to do that. Next week one or two may get bumped, another one replaced on there. But so coming up with 10 was tough, but I did. Starting with number 10.
So you're going to go from the 10th to the first?
Yeah, 10 up to number 1 would be my last pick. Number 10 was the motion picture Jaws.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I thought that was a good movie. I don't know that would find its way in my top 10. What makes it your top 10?
It was, I enjoyed the movie itself, but it was also, like a lot of us, we'll hear a song which will on the radio and it'll take us back to a time. For me, Jaws kind of has its place. It was a great movie on its own right, but it also occurred when I was 16 years old, just got my driver's license, and I was driving to the beach every day. So,
okay, we'll hear more about Jaws and more about the top 10 movies of all time, according to Martin Thomas, when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to 1170 KCBQ. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my good friend Martin Thomas, a movie connoisseur in his own right, grew up in a family of show business, and has become quite a movie buff expert, giving us his top 10 movies of all time, starting from 10 to 1. He started with Jaws right before we went to a commercial break.
If you recall, too, Bob, when that picture came out in 1975, I mean, Jaws mania swept the nation. I mean, it was Bruce the Super Shark was on cover of Time. It shot Spielberg up to, you know, top tier in directors, and people were actually afraid to go in the water at that time.
And it's very well acted, well written. If you don't watch the stupid sequels, Jaws 2 and
Jaws
3D, Spielberg didn't direct those anyway.
Right.
But the first one was very good. But again, it makes your top – so many movies out there.
Yeah.
It makes your top 10 list. Why?
I really enjoyed the film. I really enjoyed it.
It triggered something.
It triggered something too when I was a kid growing up. Got my driver's license. I head out to the beach every day during that time. And
you still headed out to the beach even after you watched Jaws?
That never stopped me from getting in the water. I loved it.
That hasn't either. Body surfing's the only outdoor thing I do with any kind of religiosity, and I never worry about getting bitten by a shark. Maybe I should, but I don't.
But it was just a blast. And I remember watching an interview with Steven Spielberg talking about the film, and he commented that in his vision of the film before day one was to be a Hitchcockian type experience where you didn't see the shark until the last part of the film. And it was, if you recall, you know, you don't see it. You see these attacks and it's the ominous score by John Williams, and everyone was just, you know, scared spitless and never saw the shark until later in the film when he revealed it. I saw a subsequent interview with one of the producers, David Brown, saying, well, of course he did it that way because the darn shark didn't work half the time. So I think the truth is in there somewhere in between, but they did have a lot of problems with that mechanical shark, of course, but it worked well enough for Spielberg to launch him into superstardom.
My favorite scene in that one is Richard Dreyfuss and Roy Scheider and
Robert Shaw?
Robert Shaw, yeah, the guy that ran the boat.
Right.
And just a tension between the three of them. But then they're getting drunk and they're singing on the boat. And it's right before the boat gets a big jolt. And the famous line, we're going to need a bigger boat, when they actually see
and
a shark.
And Scheider actually improvised that line, and they used it throughout. And it became actually a catchphrase in pop culture as well. And what's sad to say is both the two leading actors, Roy Scheider and Robert Shaw, are no longer with
us. Scheider pass away just recently?
Recently. Shaw a few years back. So.
Very good actors. And, of course, Richard Dreyfuss back then was in everything, and everything was a completely different genre. He was in American Graffiti, then he was in Jaws, and then The Goodbye Girl, Close Encounters.
Right.
You wouldn't think the same actor would be in those four different movies.
Right,
but, interesting.
Right.
Okay, so continuing on the top 10, what's your number 9 spot?
Number 9 is the picture Blade Runner.
You're going to have something in common with film critic Mark Booby, and I'm almost positive that's on his top 10.
Does he like that film?
He loves Blade Runner. Tell me if I'm wrong, but
we actually agree on something then.
Mark's a little. You should know that when we all get together and watch movies, it's like the Dead Poet Society. But instead of going to the beach and talking about poetry, we hang out over coffee and talk about movies, and we're all very opinionated. Some of us hate things as much as others love them.
And that was directed by Ridley Scott, and it starred Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Sean Young, Edward James Olmos, who now plays Commander Adama in the Battlestar Galactica series. Daryl Hannah was also in the picture as well. And it did not do well commercially.
But it became a cult classic afterwards.
Exactly. And if people see it, it's a visually stunning picture set in the future with a Vangelis score. He did Chariots of Fire. And it's really a beautiful film just to watch, visually. It was a really great film. And one of the effects artists was Douglas Trumbull, and he also worked on 2001: A Space Odyssey. He did Close Encounters of the Third Kind and a movie near and dear to our heart, Star Trek: The Motion Picture.
You mean, Star Trek movies in general are near and dear to our heart.
Correct.
The fans didn't like. They called that one Star Trek: The Motionless Picture.
I was being somewhat facetious with that pick, but it was visually stunning.
It was visually stunning.
I remember seeing the clip for that movie before it launched everything, and they had actually Orson Welles narrating the teaser trailer. And I just couldn't wait to see it. And
Star Trek: The Motion Picture had wonderful special effects, and that was the only wonderful thing about it. Now, before we leave Blade Runner, this was very interesting because one of the themes in Blade Runner, of course, was these androids were wanting to know what their origin was.
Right.
And I remember what to me was a very chilling scene was this woman who thought she had this past. She could remember things. And Harrison Ford says, don't you understand? Those are membranes that they put in you. But at the end of the movie, Harrison Ford starts asking, it makes me wonder where I come from.
Right.
And
right.
where my creator is. I threw that in for Mark Boobian because Mark Boobian could find Christian symbolism on the back of a can of tuna by reading the ingredients. But I think with Blade Runner, we're really on to something that really invokes questions
right.
about God and origin, very right. much in the way 2001 did.
Right, right. Yeah, the film, there's a couple different cuts of the film, but the audience is questioning if Harrison Ford's character, you know, the cop, the Blade Runner, if he actually is a replicant himself. Yeah, so
really interesting. Okay, interesting film. So that's your number nine spot. What's number eight?
Number eight is Chariots of Fire.
Wonderful film.
Great film. Saw that when I was in college. I was on the track team in college and just absolutely loved it. And that was released in 81. It garnered 4 Oscars, including Best Picture.
And church groups used to go in droves to see this movie, which just goes to show when Hollywood makes something positively religious,
right,
it does better at the box office,
right,
and they seem to still go out of their way to make The Last Temptation of Christ and things like that.
Right. Now, Eric Little was the Christian runner.
And it was based on a real person.
Based on a real person.
Eric Little who ran in the Olympics.
Right, as well as Harold Abrams, the Jewish athlete, and they did both compete in the 1924 Olympics.
And you were really rooting for both characters,
sure
even though originally they were supposed to run against each other, but you liked both of those guys in the movie.
Right. And fate had it that Little had a different race. Now, when I did some research on the history later, come to find out there wasn't that dramatic showdown at the Olympics. He actually knew that the heat was going to be run on a Sunday well ahead of time.
And he
wouldn't run on the Sabbath. Also, Eric Little's sister was one of the technical advisors, and she denounces to this day that she put pressure on her brother for his running because it conflicted with his spiritual beliefs and his ministry. She denies that happened, but it made it for a good story.
It did, however, he did refuse. So what's not true is that the sister put pressure on him, but what is true is he refused to run on the Sabbath.
He did, but he also knew well in advance that the heats were not going to be run on Sunday. So before he even got on the boat, they worked out his races. And
so they worked it out ahead of time.
There was a dramatic license taken with that, but it was a beautiful picture.
You know, you got to make a movie interesting. But I remember admiring him. Now, anyone who's listened to the show knows I don't believe Sunday is the Sabbath. I mean, we're at church all day, and for the pastor, it sure is. Isn't a day of rest, but still, this was what he believed, and God looks at the heart and the motives. And I thought, I got to admire a man who won't run on the Sabbath, even if God someday takes him aside and goes, Eric, Sunday wasn't the Sabbath. So, okay, what's next?
Well, interesting though, before we go on the next pick, is that once that movie was in the can, they had a hard time shopping for a studio to distribute the film
because it was too positively religious.
There really was no market for it.
I've heard people say it was slow and it didn't have a lot of action.
Yeah, and they came real close into turning it to a TV movie.
Okay, more of these. Chariots of Fire and Blade Runner and Jaws are the first three on Martin Thomas's top 10 list. You might want to tell us what some of your favorites are if you'd like to weigh in. 1-888-344-1170. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with film connoisseur and very good friend Martin Thomas. He's going through his favorite top 10 movies of all time, going from 10 to 1. It had begun with Jaws, moved up to Blade Runner, and then Chariots of Fire was where we left off. What's next on your list, Martin?
Number 7 on my list is a movie called The Spirit of St. Louis.
I don't believe I have ever seen that one. I saw the other three. I have not seen The Spirit. I know it's a classic. I don't know anything about it.
It is a classic. It was released in 1957.
Who stars in that?
It stars James Stewart and Murray Hamilton, who actually was the mayor in Jaws.
Oh, we don't want to warn the people because it'll cause a panic guy. Okay.
And our close personal friend, Robert Cornthway, had a big part in that movie as well. And
I'm so envious of all these close friends your family had. Why couldn't I have had friends like that? My friends were just ordinary guys.
And the story revolves around the historic flight that Charles Lindbergh took.
Oh, Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah. Charles Lindbergh took his famous transatlantic flight from New York to Paris. And his prep for the flight, and as well as flashbacks when he's having the flight as well. So it was a great picture. You need to take that call?
Well, let's go ahead. We have Eric on line one. Go ahead, Cameron. Eric, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Hi. You said to call in with a top 10 movie?
Yeah, or one of yours on the top 10. But yeah.
I think it would have to be Corrie Ten Boom's The Hiding Place, which was adapted to cinema.
That was a wonderful movie. I think it was Billy Graham Pictures that released it, but unlike some of the Billy Graham movies that ended with people turning Billy Graham on and watching him on TV, Corrie Ten Boom, who hid the Jews from the Holocaust in Holland, it was a wonderful movie. I know it starred Julie Harris and Arthur O'Connell, a couple of other people.
And then at the end of the movie, you actually got to see Corrie Ten Boom in the actual home that they were taken from by the Nazis. It's just very, very. But my favorite scene in the movie was when they were being taken into the death camp, and they smuggled the Bible in. And you could, it was no special effects, of course, but you could almost see the angels, actually in the cinematic production, duplicating what actually took place when the angels helped them smuggle in a Bible. I mean, that just. If anyone hasn't seen that movie, it's a must see.
And I think it is available on DVD, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, Ben-Hur.
Ben-Hur is on my top 10 list. Thank you. I absolutely love Ben-Hur.
That's one you can watch over and over every year.
You can. And the effects hold up after all these years. But I agree with you, Eric, that even when they don't have great special effects, I like character-driven stories. These days with computers, we can do anything with special effects now. And we've got to have a good story and good characters.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I miss Randall Terry's Gatekeepers radio broadcast that was defunct a few years ago. Can you possibly get him on as a guest?
Oh, we could look into that. We could.
Oh, man, you and him would be good chemistry.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. We'll definitely look into it. And, Eric, thanks for listening to our program. Call us again sometime. Okay, I'm here with Martin Thomas going through the top 10 movies, and you're welcome to weigh in as Eric did, but... we are on The Spirit of St. Louis, the story of Charles Lindbergh. And, of course, any movie with Jimmy Stewart is good.
It's great. And part of it, the story takes place in San Diego because Ryan Aeronautical, San Diego firm, actually built the Spirit. And he actually flew it from San Diego to New York. And
I did not know he flew that out of San Diego.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, back to his base, basically, in New York. And then
the flight itself was New York to Paris, wasn't it?
Yeah. In fact, in the movie, when he shuttles after a test flight and lands in New York before he takes off, he's greeted by the character actor Bob Cornthway. And they have a big scene in there where the plane taxis out. Jimmy Stewart gets out of the plane and has a dialogue with Bob, and they go in together into this hangar. And Bob had said they had to – shoot that scene several times. And so at the end of the shoot, you know, Jimmy Stewart was exhausted because he had to actually climb out of the plane each and every time. But Bob said that he was just a professional, just did everything right. And it was an uncanny resemblance that he had of Lindbergh because Lindbergh also was tall and skinny as well. And for me, that was a great picture. I love it on its own merit. I also love that a friend of ours was in that picture as well. So,
well, I definitely need to see that sometime because I know
movie.
That's a classic.
It really is.
You know, it's amazing the classic movies. That only a few years ago, I finally saw Casablanca for the first time.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful movie. But I can't believe how many years I was alive before I saw that.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm the same way.
Let's move on up that top 10 list.
Number six is The Adventures of Robin Hood.
It's one of the Errol Flynn Robin Hoods?
Right, absolutely. That's the, in my book, the definitive
okay, so now I want to be clear for our audience, Martin, that the Robin Hood with Kevin Costner doing such a superb job would not be on your top 10 list.
No, would not.
Okay.
Yeah, this
good.
Was,
we can still speak to you.
Was released by Warner Brothers. Came out in 1938, and it won actually three Oscars. And yeah, it starred, as you mentioned.
They actually gave Oscars to films like Robin Hood in those days.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's got to be gay nuns on dope or something to get a, get an Academy Award. But back then it was.
Yeah, it was actually nominated for Best Picture. It didn't win, though. But it starred, as you mentioned, Errol Flynn, Olivia de Havilland, Basil Rathbone, Claude Rains, who was also in Casablanca, and Alan Hale, a great character actor, you know, on contract with the Warner Brothers. And, you know, there have been several Robin Hood films over the years, including a 1922 version remake starring Douglas Fairbanks, which was very successful. And originally for the role, Warner Brothers was going to have Jimmy Cagney as Robin Hood.
Jimmy Cagney?
Yeah.
Okay, you dirty
yeah.
guys, get yeah, to the Sherwood Forest.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, exactly. Goodness. You imagine him in tights running around the forest?
Well, now, I know that you love adventure movies and action. Out of all the adventure movies that have ever been made, how does Robin Hood make your top 10?
I just love that film. It's because it's been around forever. I've seen it as a kid. I've seen it, you know, I owned it when it was out on VHS. And, of course, DVD, you've got a copy of that.
The Errol Flynn versions are good. I have to admit, you know, Robin Hood has all the makings of wonderful drama, yet most of the Robin Hood movies I've seen, I haven't liked, except for the one that Daffy Duck and Porky Pig made. That was one of my favorites, and they actually put the real Errol Flynn at the end of that movie. I don't know if you remember
that. Is that right?
That.
I don't
Errol
that.
Flynn appeared in the cartoon. But,
and I love Errol Flynn. I mean, he, in his first, well, not his first picture, but you know, one of his first commercially successful films, you know, Captain Blood. And I remember growing up, my dad having a little concern that I was a fan of Errol Flynn because Errol Flynn was a womanizer and a big drinker and stuff. And my dad kind of downplayed those, but I still, he had such charisma on the screen that you know, I just really liked him.
Well, I thought he had nobody but Maid Marian. This is distressing news, Mark.
It's, yes, there were many more.
There were one or two other women on the set besides Maid Marian.
Interesting with Maid Marian, the horse that she rode in that production, later became Roy Rogers' Trigger.
No kidding. Yep. So yeah, was it a female horse when she rode it and became a male horse?
Something
when
like that.
They did. Matt, I hear Lassie was really laddie, too.
But, yeah, that's what I heard.
Or at least one of the 100 Lassies.
That was hard for me to get over that one.
Okay, we're going to do more when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Martin Thomas, a film connoisseur, going through the top 10 movies of all time, according to him. We'll be right back.
How many times have you heard the phrase, they're all the same, applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, when people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt. For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Top 10 movies of all time. Well, you have your opinion. So does film critic and connoisseur Martin Thomas, who so far going from 10 on up has been Jaws, Blade Runner, Chariots of Fire, Spirit of St. Louis. What's next, Martin?
Number five on my list is The Right Stuff.
And that did I miss six? Did I skip
number
one?
Six was The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Oh, that's right. I forgot Robin Hood. Okay.
The non-Kevin Costner
edition. Non-Kevin Costner edition, of course. How could we forget Robin Hood? Okay, so number five is The Right Stuff. The Right Stuff is a tremendous movie. Did not do well at the box office.
No, it
did. But Academy Award nominee, won a few awards.
Yeah, won four, and it was released in 1983. It was based on the best-selling book by Tom Wolfe. And I actually read that book in college, couldn't wait for the film to come out. And I have to say that of all the books that I've read that have made it to the silver screen, The Right Stuff is probably the closest proximity to the actual novel that I've ever seen.
It was almost like watching a miniseries.
Yeah, it was. In fact, Tom Wolfe's original incarnation was to go all the way up to, the space shuttle. But he just, he got to the Mercury astronaut. There was the test pilots to the seven Mercury astronauts. He had so much material at that point, he basically stopped. And the book is just huge. And, it was just a great
book. And they started from Chuck Yeager, and then they went all the way to the time of John Glenn and the Mercury flights.
Yep, the Mercury 7. And tremendous, history about the test pilots, and pushing the envelope, and Chuck Yeager being the premier, test pilot. And then going into, then the Mercury 7, who there was a distinction between the hotshot test pilots. A lot of them didn't want to volunteer for the astronaut program because they just figured, hey, you weren't a pilot. You were just,
sitting. They called it spam in a can.
In the
You're
can,
doing
exactly.
what a chimpanzee could do.
Exactly.
And chimpanzees have done it.
Yeah. But then the public was saying, my gosh, it's so dangerous. They're first sending up monkeys before they send men up. So these guys were heroes before they even stepped foot in the spacecraft.
That's right. Hey, guys, you can be a hero and you don't have to do anything, except you might die.
Yeah, exactly. But great film. Gosh, huge cast. Sam Shepard, Scott Glenn, Ed Harris, Dennis Quaid, Fred Ward, Barbara Hershey, among just a few. There were so many great parts, and it's just a delight to watch.
It was educational. It was informative, and yet it was incredibly entertaining.
Right.
What an entertainment from start to finish.
Exactly. And what's interesting is this was before, of course, CGI, and they had a lot of huge amount of effects to do with, test jet aircraft to, the Mercury capsules in space. And they were first doing motion control, which is a lot what Star Wars did, is basically, having the models static and then, zooming the camera back and forth. For The Right Stuff, they actually, the director wanted more of a kinetic feel, and they actually were doing practical effect shots, like tethering a model to a helium air balloon and photographing it that way and basically chucking it off garages and stuff. But they, with the editing and everything, it worked so well. You just get a real huge movement of speed, and it worked very well.
Now, let me ask you about that, because these days they can do just about anything on a computer, special effects-wise.
Right.
Do you find yourself more impressed watching a movie where you're having to guess how they did it, and you can't just say, oh, well, they did it on a computer, that's how they did it?
It depends. I love to be stumped, first off. But now with today's technology, you can do anything the director imagines. But there are some times where a practical effect, like a model shot, like Lord of the Rings did not just CGI, but also practical model shots as well. So I like to see a film that has a combination of both. But again, it goes back to story first,
Yeah. In fact, speaking of Lord of the Rings, everybody talks about the special effects. I wish there had been some awards for acting, because especially in a fantasy, the Academy tends to not want to give an award in a fantasy, but that's where the acting has to be even more believable.
Exactly.
Because if we don't believe the character, all the special effects in the world are not going to make a difference.
Exactly. That's absolutely true.
And the acting was first rate in that movie.
Absolutely.
Well, I love The Right Stuff. I should say, like I said, Spirit of St. Louis, I haven't seen. The others, I think, are all wonderful movies. Not one of these has made my top 10 list, but I know it's somewhat subjective.
It's very
but
subjective.
I have to agree with you that a lot of these are great movies. Even the Robin Hood. I think the Errol Flynn version was one of the better versions.
I don't think we have got enough time for me to go over my top 100, so.
No.
So some of our pictures will
after we get 100 hours of radio, maybe. Okay, go ahead to your next one.
Number four was the motion picture Alien, directed by Ridley Scott. It won one Oscar for Best Effects, Visual Effects, and it starred Tom Skerritt, Sigourney Weaver, Veronica Cartwright, John Hurt, and Ian Holm. Great film. I mean, it was a marriage between sci-fi and horror. And
yes,
just so well done.
And I have to say, it was the first time I went to a horror movie and got scared, because you knew something was going on with that guy. And when that thing came out of his stomach, you knew something was coming down the pipe. You had no idea what it was going to be. And we got into one of those big Cinerama theaters, and we got in there late, and it was like opening night. And I was sitting in the second row from the back, basically staring up almost at the ceiling to watch the movie. And then we saw that scene.
And what's interesting about that scene is that it was publicized that the crew, the actors, didn't really know what was going to happen. Of course, they knew it was going to happen. They read the script. But there was a certain part where Ridley Scott, the director, had the actors leave the set. And then they prepped John Hurt for the chest burst monster to come out. And the actors were not prepared for the amount of blood was going to be spattered all over the place. And you can see especially Veronica Cartwright, she got splattered. It was so surprised and shocked her, she actually fell over backwards. And they didn't rehearse. That was just the one scene that made the film.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just pure shock for
her. What were they actually using for blood?
The regular fake blood, the stuff that they use.
Fake blood, Heinz ketchup or 57 sauce or something.
Back in the old days, it was, when black and white, it was Hershey syrup and water.
No kidding.
Yeah, back in the old days.
I love these old stories.
Literally lick your wounds at that point.
I heard that was actually milk raining on Gene Kelly and Singing in the Rain, too, because it was a better effect than
that could be.
When they were filming it than water. Wow.
Just one quick thing about Alien is this shows the ingenuity of Ridley Scott. There was a shot with the point of view of the crew members going to their ship, Nostromo, and it didn't work. And the model, it was too late to redo the model. And so what Ridley Scott did is he had the point of view of the actors for a video feed of approaching the ship, so he can insert a lot of video disruptions and static, and that way that the model actually passed because it was a video point of view, and it played beautifully.
Now I have to ask you, what did you think of the Alien sequels?
I've seen all of them. In fact, I own all of them. There's like a 9-pack or something like that. I can't
I
remember how many movies.
I think
they
have four, and then there's Alien versus Predator, which the fifth one.
Yeah. They got progressively worse as time went on.
Indeed they did.
But the second one, Aliens, was directed by James Cameron, and that actually was a good
picture.
He
went on and did Titanic.
That was a good picture.
It was well made. I have to say, though, that the suspense was in that first movie where we didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. By the time we got to the second movie and aliens are popping out of bodies all over the place, it seemed like more of an action and less of a suspense. Well, we'll continue with the top 10 movies of all time, according to my friend Martin Thomas, when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with my good friend and movie critic connoisseur ordinaire, Martin Thomas. He's been going through the top 10 movies of all time from 10 to 1. So far, it's been Jaws, Blade Runner, Chariots of Fire, Spirit of St. Louis, Robin Hood, the Errol Flynn version, which means one of the few good versions, The Right Stuff, Alien, not the stupid sequels, but the original, and three more to go.
Number three on my list is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Walt Disney production was released in 1954, won two Oscars, And it starred, of course, Kirk Douglas, James Mason, Peter Lorre, and Paul Lucas.
What were the, obviously one Oscar must have been special effects. What was the other Oscar for?
Best art direction, set decoration, and of course effects.
Wow. Yeah. And Disney was not known to make those kinds of movies at that time. It was a real pioneer, even within the rights of Disney Studios.
It was a very bold move for Disney because he was also neck deep in Disneyland. Disneyland was opened the year after this movie came out. So he was, if this movie flopped, that would have been the end of Disney Studios.
Wow.
And they actually, he had bankers come in on the set to loan more money, and he showed them clips of what had been done, and they just were blown away by it and gave him an extra $1 million to finish the film.
I saw this movie again not too long ago. It really holds up. You could think it was made with today's special effects.
Absolutely.
That it was
really,
made in the 50s, you
really
would
does.
Have no idea.
It just blows me away, and that's why it's on my list, because it was 1950s technology, great storytelling. Disney went all out, got the best people to work on it, and it just it could be re-released in the theaters today and would work.
And a true portrayal of the famous and brilliant Jules Verne.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very, very good movie. And also, Peter Ellenshaw did the matte effects with it. His son went on to work on the Star Wars films.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a great film.
Okay.
I could talk for hours on that
one. Well, we could talk for hours about any of these. Unfortunately, in the few minutes we have, the audience is just dying of suspense all over the country. They want to know what Martin Thomas's top two movies are. What's next?
Number two is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, studio was 20th Century Fox, came out in 1969, won 4 Oscars. The director was the famous Judge Roy Hill. George Roy Hill, and starred Paul Newman, Robert Redford, Catherine Ross, and Strother Martin. Great picture.
There had never been a movie like it. It was a Western, and yet It didn't always seem like a Western.
Right.
Had a
right.
Burt Bacharach score in a Western of all things.
And B.J. Thomas singing, Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head.
Yeah.
Even Redford said, what is that in there? But the audience loved it. And it turned him around, too.
And it won Best Song of the Year that year.
Yeah. And can you believe that Robert Redford was only 30 years old?
Well, this was the first Newman-Redford collaboration. I guess the only other time they were together was The Sting.
And they wanted to do other projects, but scripts never came their way.
Well, they were good enough that they could take a good project and not take anything that came along.
Right.
Like a Michael Caine who makes 35, 40 movies a year.
Right, right. So,
I have to wonder. That's not on my top 10, but it ought to be on my top something.
Such great chemistry.
At least be in top 30 or so.
Yeah, it was very well done. Very well done.
So. Wonderful movie.
And just real quick, because we're talking about Paul Newman, my dad was able to converse with Paul Newman on the set on Somebody Up There Likes Me. And my dad said there's like an unwritten rule in Hollywood that principal actors usually don't talk to extras. And Paul Newman engaged my father in conversation, was reserved but very, very friendly. And my dad, remembers that conversation to this day.
It's nice to know that a famous actor like that was not some kind of snob.
Absolutely.
He was a good man. I was very saddened by his death, which was not too long ago.
Yeah, in fact, there'll be probably a tribute to him on the next Academy Awards.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But his salad dressing does live on.
Oh, I love his spaghetti sauce.
Oh, I didn't know he made spaghetti sauce.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've had his. I love his Caesar salad dressing,
and that money goes to charity as well.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? I know that he was kind of liberal in this politics, but unlike some actors, he knew how to keep his big mouth shut and just act. And he was just a tremendous actor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, we're down. So that's your number two.
It's number two. Number one, I'm kind of cheating a little bit. I'm combining 3 movies into one for my top pick.
Well, it's kind of like that's in the spirit of the Trinity.
Absolutely.
We combine 3 persons into one godhood.
Absolutely. So I knew on your show I can get away with
it. You could do that. We understand the concept of 3 yet one on the Bob Siegel Show.
So that is the Lord of the Ring trilogy.
Well, that one, we finally, that made it on my top 10 list. Although I put it in the 10th spot, but it is by all means one of the best motion pictures ever made.
It was. And unlike, our friend...
Mark Boubian. Who did not like it.
Did not like it. That's because he was a big fan of the literary works by Tolkien. And the Peter Jackson vision of the films brought me in because I was really actually a non-fan of Tolkien. I tried reading the books in college. I just couldn't get into it. Some friends dragged me to see the animated feature. I almost walked out of it. I just did not get me until I saw Peter Jackson's vision of the film, and I'm now a Tolkien fan because of those films.
Yeah, you are. And I thought, I had read the book in high school, the 3 books, and I too liked the movie better. Normally, I'm the kind of person who would have been disturbed by this. Well, this was in the book. Why wasn't it in the movie? but I just didn't remember enough of it for it to bother me. So I'm very sympathetic for those that compared it. But I remember when I got to Return of the Kings, that was the most boring book to me because I like watching battles more than reading about them. Right, I don't like reading what color the armor was and what the dimensions and the stain from the grass was. But seeing it was just a tremendous movie. And like I said, extremely well acted, which it never gets credit for.
And there actually is a tie between the Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Errol Flynn Robin Hood.
A tie.
There's a tie-in.
Oh, you don't mean they come in as a tie on your list.
No,
there's a tie-in.
There's actually a tie-in. There's a master swordsman by the name of Bob Anderson. He actually helped choreograph the sword fight scenes in Robin Hood. He helped train Errol Flynn. He also was the master swordsman on Lord of the Rings.
No kidding.
Yep.
Now, I'm surprised that I know you're a huge Star Wars fan. Why did that not get your top 10?
Or
if you did a top 20, would that make it
absolutely,
to your top 20?
Yeah, of the Star Wars trilogy.
And you would do the same thing? You'd say the six Star Wars movies count as one movie, kind of like Lord of the Rings?
Probably my favorite of all of them is probably Empire Strikes Back.
It was the best of all of them. But I know Lucas likes us to think of it as one movie.
Right. But yeah, his original envision was someone to sit down in a theater with popcorn and be there like 8 hours or something like that.
Right. Or at least come back the following summer and buy another ticket and keep Lucasfilms alive.
And there was a rumor, too, on Lord of the Rings trilogy that they were thinking about having Sean Connery. Sean Connery was offered a part, and he turned it down. I don't know what part it was, but it would have been an interesting picture had he said yes.
Well, you know, I'm a big Sean Connery fan, but I'm almost glad he didn't because seeing relative unknowns made us believe more in the characters. Now, I know Ian...
That's a point, yeah.
Ian, was it McKellen?
Uh-huh.
He was known in some circles, but...
Well, Kate Blanchett, Liv Tyler, but you're absolutely correct. I think even Viggo Mortensen, people would recognize him from other films, but with the wig and his beard and stuff like that, you really didn't really know who he was.
It helps me. I know that in the original Star Wars, with the exception of Alec Guinness,
right. They
were unknowns. That was before Harrison Ford was the Harrison Ford.
Right.
And it really helped draw us in and think of them just as the characters. I'd like to see more directors do that because I think it's better for the story. And it gives new actors a break as well. And I, again, love Sean Connery, but I guess I'm glad he was not in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. It incredible picture. Yes, I don't tire seeing that those films.
Well, we made it through your top 10. Let's review them again. Number 10, Jaws. Number 9, Blade Runner. Number 8, Chariots of Fire. Number 7, Spirit of St. Louis. Number 6, Robin Hood, the Errol Flynn version. Number 5, The Right Stuff. Number 4, Alien. Number 3 was what?
20,000
Leagues Under the Sea. And then number 2...
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid,
and number 1, The Lord of the Rings. Well, there's considerable agreement. I haven't seen The Spirit of St. Louis, but I can't imagine a Jimmy Stewart movie I wouldn't like. I don't like Robin Hood movies in general, but when I saw the Errol Flynn version, I remember it being the one I did like. The only one that shows up on my top 10 list is Lord of the Rings, but these would all be movies that I would call good movies. So
yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot to agree on. Now, have you seen any of the nominees for Best Picture coming out? And is there anything you're rooting for?
It was interesting to see Mickey Rourke, get the Golden Globe, and so he's up for Best Actor for In the Wrestler. What's interesting is shortly after he was given that honor, he publicly gave some pro comments about George Bush. Which in Hollywood, that's kind of
an actor gave pro comments about George. Oh,
and some are saying he may have blown his chances Academy Award.
Did he not get nominated?
He was nominated. So I'm Mickey Rourke's been around for a long time. He's had some problems, and it'd be kind of neat to see him win the best actor award on that.
Yeah. Now, did you see? I hear that the Clint Eastwood's movie got snubbed.
It did. It was not.
It was a wonderful
nominated because you saw. I haven't had a chance to see it.
I saw it and. I think probably because usually a movie that's against racism will, because they're portraying somebody who is a racist, he'll make racist kinds of comments. So people then go and overreact to the language and they don't look at the point of the movie.
Right.
It's kind of sad. They did that a number of years ago. They were taking Huck Finn out of libraries because it had the N-word. But people talk that way in those ways.
Right.
And ironically, Mark Twain, way ahead of his time, long before it became fashionable, was writing a book against slavery, and now they ban it in the name of racism. Well, Martin, the time went by far too quickly. We will have you on again. I'll maybe have you and Mark come on and spar one time.
That'll be interesting.
But know this, M-A-R, the first three initials for any of our critics, whether it's Martin or Mark. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.
Is your fence teetering on its side like the Leaning Tower of Pisa? Are termites feeding off its